Up next, smell part two. A new study this week in the journal Neuron looks at how your brain processes and learns about smells. Think about smells of the holiday season. There's the cinnamon and apple cider, sugar cookies are baking, a turkey roasting in the oven. Smells and memories certainly go together, and chances are, if your memories of the holiday are good, then those food smells will be pleasant to you. And vice versa, I would imagine. We've all had that experience. So how does your brain make these connections? And is learning about smell as important to our survival as it is to other animals, like perhaps like the shrews and the mole we just heard about? Joining me now to talk more about smelling and learning is my guest, Jay Gottfried. He is assistant professor of neurology at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine. He joins us by phone from the campus in Chicago. Thanks for talking with us today.
My pleasure.
Have you been listening to our former guest at all about smell?
Yeah, I did get a chance to hear some of that.
Mm-hmm. Tell us what you're reporting. Tell us about your main finding that you've published.
Right. So what we set out to do in our study is try and understand how sensory experience may allow you to learn about the world of smells. To get to the heart of the matter, what we did is we exposed subjects to a single smell continuously for 3 minutes. For example, maybe a minty smell or a floral smell. What we find is that after this manipulation, the subjects are better able to discriminate among related mint smells or, conversely, among related floral smells, depending on what they had experienced during that critical test session.
Mm-hmm. And what did you learn?
So what we learned is that essentially humans can learn about categories of smells simply through sort of passive exposure and training, and as little as a 3-minute sensory exposure is sufficient to engender this learning, which can persist for up to 24 hours. So, for example, if you smelled a minty smell for 3 minutes, you would essentially become a mint expert.
Well, could you distinguish between different kinds of minty smells?
That's precisely what we were doing. So there are peppermint smells, spearmint smells, a whole family of minty smells, and we found that if you did have the benefit of this continuous exposure to one minty smell, you're better able to tell the difference among the whole set of mint smells.
But
and we
said...
did find, and this effect seemed to be specific for the odor quality that you were experiencing. So if you became a mint expert, you didn't also become a floral expert.
Uh-huh. But you said this expertise lasts for about 24 hours.
That's the longest time point we've looked at so far. I wouldn't be surprised if it went out to longer time points. What's interesting about the experimental paradigm we used is it really is a reflection of how we engage the olfactory world on a day-to-day basis. We usually don't sit down and study the smells and try and categorize them in any active or conscious fashion. We sort of experience smells in a fairly passive format. Nevertheless, the adult human is really capable of recognizing and discriminating probably hundreds of thousands of different smells. And it's been an open question how this process takes place.
Huh. It also would explain how you have experts, so maybe wine experts, tea experts, coffee experts. Who?
Right. I think that's exactly true. I think what our study speaks to is the fact that as long as you are willing to put in the time and attention to a smell category, you can gain expertise in that, even if passively. So you may not need to take an expensive wine class, for example, to become a wine expert. All you need to do is stick your nose into the wine glass for a while.
Where in the area of your brain does that smell process take place, and how does it link into a memory?
Right. So the areas we found involved in this learning mechanism were sort of deep primitive structures of the olfactory brain, one area called the piriform cortex and another area called the orbital frontal cortex. And what's really interesting about this second region in particular, the orbital frontal cortex, which sits sort of on the base of the brain just behind the eyes, is that it's critically involved in emotion, behavior, and motivational states. And if you think about smell in evolutionary terms, smell was really the original sense that drove most of animal behavior. So whether you're dealing with food and foraging, mating behavior, kinship recognition, maternal bonding, escaping predators, all of this was sort of under the control of smell information. So it comes as no surprise, really, that the same areas we see involved in smell processing are also those involved in emotion, memory, and goal-directed behaviors.
Yeah, because we, you know, every once in a while you'll smell something that you say, oh, gosh, I haven't smelled that in 30 years. And it brings back that emotion.
Right.
That you felt. Is it possible to reprogram a bad smell emotional reaction to make it a positive one?
I think it probably is. One of the unique things about the olfactory system is it's very plastic and malleable. I can give you a personal anecdote as an example. There's this really noxious smell called 4-methylpentanoic acid, which sort of smells like cheese or sour sweat or a bad day in the gymnasium.
I think we're getting the picture on that.
Yeah. But in the middle of July, not December. Anyhow, it's used quite a lot in olfactory experimentation, and we use it a lot in our lab. And probably after the 10th or 20th time of smelling this thing, it became so familiar and part of the lab environment that it really is somewhat pleasant to me now. At least it's certainly nowhere near as disgusting as a novice would think it is.
We're talking about smell this hour with Jay Gottfried on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Does that mean it loses its use to you now that it's so common? You got adjusted to it?
Yeah, I think that novelty plays an important role, and certain smells, as they become more familiar, lose a lot of their behavioral saliency or meaning. Of course, there are many other smells which retain that, and I think it's important that certain smells retain their associations and connections to foods or predators or attractive members of the opposite species in order to promote survival and ensure that the organism does not extinguish itself.
1-800-989-8255. Kevin in Millville, New Jersey. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. Yes. You answered part of my question. But I am a therapist at a state institution, and we have guys come in, you know, as adults. And I saw one case where a man, it seemed that we happened upon this information that he calmed down, he de-escalated when he met a staff he'd never met before because she wore the same perfume as his mother. And we just happened upon this information, and I was curious about how much this is really happening, that through olfactory memory, they are, you know, it is actually used to help de-escalate and calm an individual. And you've answered that pretty much.
Well, loosen your cell. I think he's gone. Any reaction, Jay?
Sure. I think that's a very interesting story, and it doesn't surprise me at all. There are many different odors that can provoke very specific physiological and autonomic reactions, changes in blood pressure, heart rate, pupil diameter. It seems like certain smells may be hardwired, or if not hardwired, at least through exposure and experience, able to elicit very potent responses, such as what we've heard described.
How does what you're told about a smell change the way you experience the smell?
I think that also reflects the concept of malleability and flexibility in the olfactory system. You can take the same smell, and this sweaty smell I was talking about, if I put that smell in a brown bag and said, you know what, I just got this great cheddar cheese from London, why don't you take a sniff? If you smelled that, you'd probably think it smelled pretty good. On the other hand, if I turn around and said, you know, I just found this bag full of dirty gym socks, don't smell that, I can tell you would probably wince upon smelling that. So verbal information, yes, very much can dictate human olfactory perception, along with whatever context you're experiencing the smell in, and prior memory, learning, and experience.
Well, if you're a scientist and you're testing for smell, do you have to control for any of these factors?
We do, and that's always one of the challenges in the lab. We use this somewhat complex machine called an olfactometer, which is fancy for smell machine. Basically, it allows us to produce very precise quantities of smell that we can deliver to the subjects. And we usually try and restrict our smells to sort of single molecule species that have very well-defined parameters in terms of what they smell like.
Mm-hmm. Well, as long as we're not pinning the olfactometer this hour, we're very happy pinning the meter on. I want to thank you very much for taking time to be with us, Jay.
Okay, my pleasure.
And good luck to you. Have a happy holiday.
You too. Thanks a lot.
J.A. Gottfried is Assistant Professor of Neurology at the Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine. Kimberly Jones is our Technical Director. Our audio engineers are Neil Rauch and Manoli Ratherall in New York and Linda Mack in Washington. Greg Smith composed our theme music. And we had help today from NPR librarian Key Maleski. If you have comments or questions, write to us at Science Friday, 4 West 43rd Street, Room 306, New York, New York, 10036, or surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com, where we have a podcast. We have a special podcast up this week because we talked about Carl Sagan today. We're going to have featuring a podcast that last interview we did with him in May of 1996, just a few months before his death, if you'd like to listen to that interview with Carl Sagan. Also, Science Friday's Kids Connection is up there, and also we have a link to Facebook and Squidoo. Two new places you can find Science Friday on the Internet. Have a great and safe holiday. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.